going on down there?
Hi everyone, I'm Vangelis on this Saturday, March the 28th, 2009. We just watched Where Is Thy Sting, the fifth episode of Transformers Animated, the third thing to have watched. With me today is Aaron.
Hello.
Gog Dog.
Hey.
And Seth Buzzard in my mouth.
Howdy. Howdy to your mouth.
Howdy from in my mouth. We're going to talk to you about the newest episode of Transformers Animated, which aired today on Saturday, March the 28th, 2009. Isn't that right, guys?
Indeed.
Are you guys having a good weekend?
No.
Well,
just shut it down right there.
Because we certainly
had a great weekend, more than enough to make up for Aaron.
Because we certainly didn't watch this in its illegal leaking sometime in the middle of the week. We just all got together right after watching the episode, even though in Canada we didn't get this one yet, and decided to talk about it. So, this episode opens up with a shot in space of the ship that I like to refer to as the Elite Guard Sentinel ship, because I like to feel special and give things names. Sentinel Prime and Jazz are on the way to Earth. Long Arm Prime comes up on the comlink and goes like, hey, what? And he tries to cockblock him. And they go like, Ultra Magnus, and Ultra Magnus pops up and goes like, yeah, huh, I told him to. So Long Arm Prime gets kind of fuzzled and worried. So, this is pretty much a continuation very directly off of Transwarped. I'll get you guys' thoughts going from top to bottom. Aaron!
Yeah, the start of the episode is just a real good kind of reconfirming for those that may not watch this or memorize everything of, hey, you know, we got a guy that's not good for anybody in his position of power, and he's trying to block out everybody else's encounters with who may know that. And then Ultra Magnus just goes, yeah, shut up.
I like his reasoning is that he has to keep it, like, because it's to get the double agent, he tried to keep it as under the wavelength as possible, which included leaving out the head of intelligence.
Yeah.
Gog, how about yourself?
Yeah, we saw Long Arm.
Indeed.
Yeah, not a whole lot has happened at this point. but it, I mean, assuming everyone has watched the episode, I'm not going to jump ahead, but I do find it satisfying how, so far in this show, the plot seems to be moving along pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good change of pace, because Transwarp picked up right from the beginning of the second season, and boom, 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 just knocked pretty much every, you know, loose end. You know, just picked right up and ran with it. And instead of just dragging along this Long Arm Prime storyline, it's picking it right up and keeping the pace quick. So I think that says good things about what we may see in the season as far as the development of the storyline.
I very much agree. I think that we've almost entirely run out of spoilers that we knew beforehand going in, which makes me really pleased. Seth Buzzard, how about you? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm getting off to an awesome start here. stutter, stammer. right, so after, getting cut off, communications cut off, Cybertron can't get a hold of the bots on Earth. They know the bots on Earth can identify the traitor. And then for like a couple episodes, nothing seems to be getting done about it. And it made me start to wonder, like, why don't they just send a ship? And then, hey, episode opens, they're sending a ship. I'm like, oh, good. They finally decided to do something about it. So that was good. I appreciated that they finally got around to sending a ship. But it is interesting that the head of security or intelligence or whatever Longarm's rank is had no idea that this was happening until they were almost there.
Yeah, and I like how it also added to his continually breaking veneer of, his whole spy job. It's just falling apart around him.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, those first couple episodes, he was very, very secure with his position and everything. And yes, I'm the head of security. Now it's like, yeah, okay, well, I guess if you want them to go, then I guess since you're the boss, then, getting very mousy, backed into a corner, it's character development, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'd say it's not necessarily character development, but it's definitely, he's changing and having to react to everything, and I think it's a good growth, a good change.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like my favorite thing in animated is the Longarm / Shockwave story arc. It's really great how,
yep,
just how it's all been set up and now it's breaking down and he's starting to panic, like, what the hell am I gonna do? I don't know where Megatron is. The net's closing in around me. It's really interesting.
Yep, especially when we see later on of that how proactive he can be. But one other thing that I forgot to mention was it's also kind of satisfying to see Sentinel Prime being a dick to someone other than Optimus.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, it's like anybody with a Prime title besides Sentinel himself. It's like, oh, what?
He's like, oh, hey, Longarm.
Yeah, he didn't even call him Longarm Prime. He's just like, hey. So I got a kick out of that too.
I like that we're finally seeing some equal opportunity dickery. Like, it kind of balances him out because it makes you like Sentinel Prime a little bit more when you see that he gives it to everybody, not just to Optimus.
Yeah. One thing too, just while we're on the subject of Sentinel, this probably is old news for everyone else, but I was flipping through the More Than Meets the Eye Volume 2 re-release by IDW, the profiles of G1. And it shows the picture of Megatron from, I think it was the first issue of War Within, when he's holding Sentinel Prime's dead head. And I'm like, holy crap, animated Sentinel Prime was based on Dreamwave Sentinel Prime.
Yeah. The head pipes and everything.
Yeah, so for some reason I never connected those dots. It's been a long time since I read the Dreamwave, so that was pretty neat.
Yeah, so moving on, we see the Autobot headquarters. Apparently the shuttle on the way to Earth knows that Wasp is heading towards the Autobots and not the Decepticons, and they're getting messed up by the moisture in the air, and we see that it's a rainy, stormy night, and Bumblebee is playing computer games. I believe it's Ninja Gladiator. It's his game of choice. And Optimus Prime walks in front of the screen, turns it off, and goes like, Bumblebee, when I said monitor duty, I didn't mean this monitor! And Bumblebee goes over to do some monitor duty until Prime leaves. And then he goes like, well, you never told me which monitor to watch. And heads back to his monitor as we all laugh heartily at the repeated joke. Then things go dark. Things get creepy. Wasp shows up and does not want to hear about it when Bumblebee, says a couple things like, hey, hang on a second, we were both screwed over. And then Wasp pulls off part of his face, which really freaked me out. It's actually just just his helmet. And basically straddles Bumblebee, takes out a mysterious-looking gun of green stuff, pulls off part of his head, and then everything goes black. And I was like, this is actually really freaking creepy. Like and the way that the Wasp narrator shows up, you just hear his voice, like, echoing
just
along.
Just Wasp at this point.
Yeah, or just Wasp, sorry. I've always... add the suffixes, I can't help it. But the way that you hear Wasp's voice echoing along with the thunder outside, I was just like, my God, he's gone nuts. So, anyway, your guys' thoughts up until that, I believe, commercial break. Let's go bottom to top. Seth!
Yes. Well, with the video game that Bumblebee's playing, there's a huge original G1 animation Easter egg. In between the two fighters, there's a like an arena, and there's a big monitor, and the face on the monitor is a computer named Torque from the Day of the Machines episode. And I know Omegas was really stoked to point that out, so I got your thunder, Omegas. I got it. And talking to Drew not long after watching the episode of Ways Back, Drew was also very much like, keep an eye out for it, keep an eye out for it. I'm only like, keep an eye out for what? You'll see it. It's right at the beginning. Because him and I, we had done a commentary track for that episode a little while ago. So if you're on TFW2005.com and you go into the Transformers general discussion, you do a search for it, you will find a thread called Drew Does Commentaries if you want to check those out. They're pretty neat. And I know, Vangelis, you were involved in one. Gog
Indeed.
Was involved in one. Kickback has done some or one or some, or I don't know. But so those are cool. Wasp taking his part of his face off. I was like, wow, really? They're doing this? Good. Okay, that's cool. want to see that again? Rewind. And Prime leaves because they've detected a Cybertronian energy signature and they don't know what it is. So that's how Bumblebee got left alone. Which he kind of skipped by whistling.
I know. I'm a summarizer.
I
can't help it.
Well,
Gogdog, how about yourself? Your thoughts on that opening section?
Like, I got a kick out of the whole Bumblebee's, just like you said, he's like, well, I didn't say this monitor, and Bumblebee's like, well, you didn't say which monitor, and I'm like, he just frickin' said it! Like 2 seconds ago! So, I don't know. At the same time, I actually found that quite hilarious, because they didn't wait an entire episode to say, you didn't say which monitor. He waited 5 seconds to say, well, you didn't say which monitor. I'm like, I could have swore he just pointed it out within, literally, you could hold your breath in that period of time. But so, I was laughing, but at the same time, I'm like, man, I really want Bumblebee to see some growth. And that was complete. I mean, there's no excuse for that. They have a freaking alarm go off. And Prime's like, well, we can't identify it as a Decepticon, but it's definitely Cybertronian. And Bumblebee's like, oh, I'm just going to play this game. And that's like season one, episode two stuff, you know? It's like, come on. So, I don't know. I was kind of disappointed, because after Bumblebee kind of risked his life to save Sari and Transwarped, I was like, maybe we'll see Bumblebee with a little bit of development here. But
maybe he was like, maybe he's like, well, I just risked my life to save Sari in episode two, so I don't got to deal with that right now.
Yeah, but the whole thing with Wasp pulling his mask off, I'm like, whoa, that is cool. I mean, the extent we usually get to see of that is like, comic art of like dead Transformers laying on the ground, or, you know, somebody been battle damaged in a comic or something. And we get to see like exposed parts, you know, little Easter eggs and stuff. But it's freaky when a bot, you know, sits face to face with another one that's his arch enemy and pulls his frickin' face off. I was like, good lord.
It got across the psychosis pretty well.
So, yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights of the episode, I must agree.
Aaron, how about yourself? Your thoughts on that opening sequence?
Yes, the take the face off and now here I'm going to shoot this whatever glowy green stuff at you was... Yeah, definitely shows that he boy ain't right.
Yeah.
I do have to say, the whole you didn't say which monitor thing definitely reminds me of when my little brother and sister were about 3 years old, and it was the whole, you know, just sit there and bold-faced lie. So I don't know if this is character sliding back or they've been lax on Earth for a little while, and so now Bumblebee's going petulant or what. But
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, Bumblebee does get his, because after the commercial, he wakes up, and he's looking at himself with the wrong eyes and his face mask up over in the back of the Autobot group shot, because Wasp has swapped paint jobs, helmets, and voice synthesizers with him. And this is the point where I realized that this episode was basically both homaging and making fun of a Prime problem. In that It's extremely, extremely obvious which one of, like, or at least that there's something wrong with Bumblebee, but no one really seems to notice. And I liked how they kept kind of hinting that it was actually kind of dumb that no one really pointed it out. Like, that sequence where Wasp is trying to explain why his mouth isn't working right and why his mask is always up, and he just kind of goes, like, you know, after a long silence, he's like, "It's a traitor!"
And he keeps referring to himself as Bumblebot.
Yeah.
I just got a laugh out of that. Like, you know, it was absurd, but I felt like it was kind of like, it was absurd, but it did it on purpose.
Yeah. And how come nobody notices Bumblebee's eyes are purple all of a sudden?
Yeah, or that Wasp was, like, speaking normally. Although, I gotta say, it was a cool touch to have them swap voices like that.
Nearest I can tell, it's been a long series of days. You got these other, you know, the out-of-town groups coming in, and everybody just quits paying attention.
Yeah. So,
well, a little bit in defense of the other Autobots, Bulkhead is the only other one of that group that had any experience with Wasp at all. And then at that point, he wasn't a lunatic.
Yeah.
He was just kind of a jerk.
So, yeah, it's an interesting little sequence. It ends with Bumblebee looking like Wasp, going like, no, I'm not the bad guy, and accidentally blowing out all the lights, which again became a running gag throughout the episode, which amused me greatly.
And that happened, what, 3 times?
Yeah. So he blows out the lights and runs for it into the rain. The Autobots go out to try to find him, and the Elite Guard shows up, and they have an argument. So I guess that whole bit, him waking up to the Elite Guard argument. Your guys' thoughts? Gog Dog!
Everybody loves to hate Sentinel Prime. I think you had mentioned it in an earlier show when we were talking about animated and how it's cool to have good guys, technically, because in Transformers, if you wear the Autobot logo, you are a good guy, you know, whether you like it or not. So it's good to have, I guess, a good guy that you still don't have to like. I just really want him to get what's coming to him. You know, just somebody stick something in that mouth. Just shut Sentinel up. So.
Well, if my theory pans out, I think that's when he's going to get it.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the whole thing with Bumblebee and Wasp is it's kind of a cool play on the whole repaint thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that Bumblebee and Wasp, I mean, they have interchangeable parts. It's like, Wasp takes his face mask off and he sticks it on Bumblebee. It's like the parts match up perfectly, so it's almost like a little homage to toys and stuff and how you can swap parts out, and it's like they physically they are the same, and even their own friends can't tell them apart. And another thing too was with the whole thing with the mask and why Bumblebee's mask was up. I was like, oh wow, we actually hadn't seen that in a while. I don't think we saw it since the pilot. In season one, where when they fight that big techno-organic blob.
Yeah.
I think
We saw it when he got his boosters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Another episode after that where he got shot into space or whatever, and he all turned red, and everyone went, oh, Cliff Jumper, and then Cliff Jumper showed up later.
Oh, okay, yeah. For some reason, I don't think I noticed it. I do, now that you think of it, I noticed it on the booster episode, but either way, it's still something that isn't used. So that was kind of a cool thing to bring back to explain why no one can recognize Bumblebee. But at the same time, it's kind of funny. It's like there's so many things wrong here, and
no one's pointing them out.
No one is piecing it together.
I think also they could also just be they're so annoyed by Bumblebee that they don't really notice. Also because they don't really care all that much, or they're like, well, Bumblebee's acting like an idiot, he's probably just trying to be funny, little prick. they're all thinking to themselves, like, why is he speaking in third person? Does he think this is funny? I mean, I'm not going to be the one to say it, but, I mean, you're an idiot, Bumblebee, but I'm not going to say it. I know, I'm sure Prime will say it. You know, Prowl's just sitting there like, mind over body. Aaron, how about yourself? Thoughts on that scene, up to the stuff?
I was thinking then, well, if Cliff Jumper is the same, is it like I'll just, you know, face swap who do I want to be today?
Maybe Cliff Jumper is like another double agent who swapped Cliff Jumper's head. Ooh,
oh, here we go.
Subtext.
Yeah.
I tell you what, though, as far as repaints go, it's like, man, I wish instead of getting an Elite Guard Bumblebee that we would have just got a Wasp, because all it takes is just a slightly different head. Like, wow, that would have been one repaint that really made sense. Especially given this episode. I mean, this episode, you know, is an homage to the whole repaint thing, and this is the one repaint that we're not getting.
I know, and I was hoping that was going to be a BotCon thing. Like, you know, this BotCon set will be these minor repaints for animated, but...
Next year, baby, come on, animated Wasp, 2010, baby, come on, I believe in my mouth!
Seth!
Okay, well, the whole mistaken identity kind of thing is, it's so tired. Like, this... Up to this point, after seeing the spaceship go into Earth, I'm checking out of the episode at this point in my head. I'm like, ugh, not this kind of story where it's going to be back and forth the whole episode. No, we tell them apart. Oh, my God. Something that happens a little earlier when Sentinel and Jazz first get to Earth and Sentinel's griping about the rain and they transform to roll out. Sentinel's just spinning out all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, he's a snowplow. Shouldn't he have some sort of traction? Like, how does he not have traction in water?
Maybe he just forgot, like, he figured that was, like, something cosmetic, so he never scanned it when he took on his vehicle mode.
Well, I think that's just part of the comedy of it, the fact that he's, you know, the elite guard, the best soldiers that's out there, and gets in this planet in some water with the perfect alt mode to deal with it, and he can't handle it, and he's swerving everywhere, and can't figure out how it works. I think it just kind of plays to that kind of comedy of how incompetent he is, but not in his own mind.
Yeah, I dig that, but it was kind of corny. But yeah, so up to this point, I'm like, oh boy, mistaken identity episode, whatever. I hope something else cool happens at some point.
Well, the next thing that happens is a lengthy conversation where Optimus Prime tries to tell Sentinel to his face, hey, by the way, Long Arm Prime's a traitor, and Sentinel goes like, oh, you what? Oh, you're so dumb. And then Prime's like, here, I'll prove it. Bumblebee, tell him. And then Wasp walks up and goes like, Long Arm Prime's arms are long!
Yeah.
Which completely destroys Prime's credibility at that moment, which I loved, because it actually lent more credit to Sentinel Prime for not believing him when, like, that's the evidence that he has.
Right.
Yeah, but why wasn't Prime like, hey, stupid, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're making me look bad.
I think that, I was wondering that, and I think that it's, like, just because Sentinel just went off on a dickery rant, Prime just got distracted and got more irritated with Sentinel. He's just like, no, listen, you idiot! And then Sentinel's like, nah, screw you guys! I'm gonna go arrest him! And then Prime's like, oh no! We're gonna arrest him!
Well, I think Prime's point was, Prime's main point was supposed to be, well, we need to get Wasp, because Wasp is as good of evidence as any. And I think it didn't come out as well as it did on the script. I'm sure the script said something along the lines of, Prime is trying to get Wasp to prove that Long Arm's the traitor. That's their goal. You know, Bumblebee kind of fumbles his lines, and then they go back to looking for Wasp. But it did come really awkward, because the whole time you're just like, someone tell them that there's a traitor. We know that crazy things have happened. And, you know, it's like from the audience perspective, we've seen people die. But then you have to realize it's like from their perspective, they don't know anything like that. They just know that there's a spy. And it's like, I think that the audience feels a greater sense of urgency than the actual characters, which was a little strange at first to understand, but it's like the whole time I'm just like, come on, tell him, and finally he spits it out. I'm like, yes.
And Sentinel's
just
what?
Like you said, there's this whole chase for Wasp going around, so they don't have time to just sit and talk over tea. It's like they gotta get this guy before he goes away, or then Prime's credibility is even more down the tubes.
Yeah. And then, basically it's I think it's just confusion, basically, is part of the aspect of it. Although I will agree, the thing of us knowing more almost kind of hurt it a little bit, because you start getting irritated at the characters. You're like, just learn what we know!
Yeah.
There
is also that one other thing is this, This is a kid's show.
Bah!
No excuse.
It's like, you know, it's a kid's show, but, for instance, Seth Buzzard has no time for corny.
No.
On his busy schedule. Anyway, yeah, they all head off, and Wasp, who they think is Bumblebee, gets left behind to guard the base. So, yeah, I guess we kind of covered our thoughts on this as we were discussing it there.
Yes. And what monitor does he choose to watch?
Oh, yeah! He goes and tries to play video games. And sucks. The next big scene is the big shockwave scene where Long Arm Prime walks into his office, which I still want as a playset. Turns into Shockwave, tries to get in touch with Megatron. He can't get a clear signal on him, so he just sends out like a repeating message that he says, like, you know, at any moment my cover's going to be blown. I'm taking matters into my own hands. You know, whenever you receive this message, know that I'm probably not going to be here anymore. And I thought that was pretty intense, like the way he delivered it. Like he's well and truly hit the point where he's like, my spy job, my alternate identity, they've got to go. I've got to, you know, I'm by myself. I'm on my own in enemy territory, and I have to figure out something to do. And that was very, very ominous, I found. I loved it. I loved his delivery on that line. Corey Burton is just such a winner in this series. So, yeah, the Shockwave drama. Seth, were you drama'd up?
Yes. Well, I love that they brought that voice back for Shockwave. Of all the little G1 homages and Easter eggs and fan wank that they've hidden all throughout animated, that's the greatest, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I love that voice because it's so cold and authoritarian sounding. It's such a great voice, so I just love hearing it. We listen to it all day.
In your mouth.
Yeah, and as I've stated several times on this podcast, I'm a huge Shockwave fanboy. So just, hey, any Shockwave at all, just give me more. I want it.
Gog Dog, how about yourself?
Yeah, it's the whole line of he's like, well, I'm just going to take matters into my own hands. It's just so satisfying because you have this bad guy, and you know he's capable of bad things, and he's not going to wait for someone to walk into his office and be like, yo, we need to have a talk. He's like, he knows ahead of, he's one step ahead of everyone, and that includes being one step ahead of the fact that he knows that they're on the way to Earth. He's not going to wait for the last possible minute to react. He's going to handle business now because he knows, he has no idea what's happening to Megatron. He's not going to wait any longer. He's done.
He's not going to be the cartoon villain that sits there for the heroes to meet him for the boss battle kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. He knows that they're going to find out, and by the time people piece together what's happened, the damage is going to be done.
Aaron, how about you?
Yeah, it seemed as if he was getting ready to enact a final plan, whatever that final plan may be, and just burn a hole out and away, and he'll get out with his head attached and as many Autobots' heads not attached.
Yeah, I don't know. It got me pumped up. And then after that, we meet the twins, at least briefly. They fly overhead. And then we see Bumblebee trying to wash the Wasp colors off himself, which was kind of cute.
And mustard.
Then, yeah. No, that was later. Yeah. This is just him with a giant sponge, basically.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a couch cushion or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the twins show up. They surround him. And, you know, this is the moment we've all been waiting for. What are these twins going to be like? They're Russian. Which, kind of confused me. I don't know. It was, it's possibly, I can get behind the Perceptor voice. This was by far the weirdest voicing choice, I've seen in this cartoon. It's not even a bad thing, really. It's just so odd, because I had to sit there listening to them talk for at least, like, you know, 15 lines before I just kind of caught up, and I was like, so they're Eastern European. Okay. my accents aren't all that good, so it might be Russian, might be Ukrainian, something like that. Basically, they roll their R's a lot, and they speak with odd sentence structure. I just don't understand it. I was really thrown off.
I forget where I read it, but somebody had kind of the good point of, you know, they did a lot of, later on, they do a lot of acrobatic-y things.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's like the Russian acrobat or the European acrobat.
Oh, that does make sense.
Type of
link
to it.
Yeah, that was the thought I had.
But, yeah, we get to see their superpowers. Then Ratchet shows up and smacks Jetfire in the back because, see, Ratchet and Prime, since they see two flying robots, they assume they're Decepticons. And
and they kind of have that buddy cop moment of flying guys. What's that mean? And then both of them Decepticons, yeah. And then go off. And then with
Jetfire out of the way, Bumblebee, who looks like Wasp, goes like, "Oh, I'm glad to see you, whoa, Team Rocket," and goes flying off into the horizon as Jetfire blasts him like 15 miles into the distance because Jetfire apparently isn't paying much attention. And Ratchet goes like, "Wrong, dagnabbit." So,
well, that was Jetstorm.
Jetstorm, yes. I'm getting their names mixed up. Which is really dumb, because it's really easy to tell who's who. Then they go like, "Brother, we make tag team!" And then there's, of course, the good guys fight. Because that's what always must happen. Anyway, this whole sequence, I guess really just focusing on the twins showing up. Up until when they didn't really get an epic combination sequence, did they?
Not yet.
Yeah, even when they did, I guess I'll cover that actually on its own thing, because I had some remarks I want to drop about it. So just the appearance, the voices, your guys' thoughts. Aaron.
I already did mine.
Did you indeed? Seth.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the voices, personally. Like, as soon as they started talking, I was like, really? Yuck. And then I was distracted trying to figure out what they were thinking. And then, as Aaron pointed out, and I confirmed, like, I guess they're going for a gymnast kind of thing. Drew, who could not join us this evening, did want me to express for him how much he liked the voices. Drew was down with those voices.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on with him, but that's where his head's at.
I'm not against them, I'm just still trying to get used to them. They just first were, like, speaking as a guy who found Perceptor's voice absolutely fine and awesome, I just found their voices very jarring. I don't know why.
Yeah. And, TFW member Malinus had asked a few days ago if people's opinions on the toys, because I wasn't really into the toys either, would be different if we had seen them on TV and seen the characters before the figures came out. And in my opinion, doesn't make it better. It actually makes me kind of not like them more.
Harsh.
So, I can't love everything. I know I'm usually considered Mr. Happy Pants.
I know, what happened? Holy crap.
The great, like, flower child kind of, it's all rad. I know that's my
that died with Busby.
Kind of character. Yeah. Burn that in flames. No, you can't love everything. So, and this is one thing that I'm just not that into. Sorry! Alright? Get off my back!
No!
Okay. Stay on my back, I don't care.
Yeah. Gog.
I have to say that I really liked the twins. I was worried because I kind of had this whole... in the same way, we're all kind of worried about Skids and Mudflap from Revenge of the Fallen and how they're going to turn out. I was kind of worried about these guys, whether they were going to be really annoying and, you know, just kind of like arguing brothers or something. And I actually liked them quite a bit. The Russian voices, you know, they're not these deep, like, stereotypical, like, "Oh, Mother Russia." It's like they're these very young, fresh voices with, you know, with these accents. And I don't know, but I fell right into it, and I liked everything about them. You know, I don't know. It just, I was worried. And, you know, about Malinus's question, I already liked the toys. I was a little disappointed in their combining gimmick, but at the same time, I was surprised at how much I liked the individual modes. So I think this does actually maybe give him a little bit of a boost. And me and Malinus were talking on Twitter earlier today, actually, when he posed that question. I said, I admit that the way that I see a character on screen does, in fact, influence my like or dislike for a toy. Maybe not completely. You know, I'm not going to forgive a toy for unforgivable sins just because I like this character. But, you know, it does warm it or cool it in my heart a little bit. But yeah, I think they pulled the twins off good. They're not just running around rambling and bumbling and doing all this stuff. They are good at what they do. And in fact, as far as Autobots with skills go, I think they've demonstrated some of the most efficient, you know, powers and abilities so far. I mean, they were doing some crazy stuff. So the question is,
due to Starscream, or is that Elite Guard training finally working out once?
I don't know.
A little bit.
Well, Blur was shown as being very competent.
And across the universe.
Well, right, but he was competent in a you get in, you learn, and you get out. And I don't think there's any question that Blur was awesome in everything he did. I meant that more of like a offensive power kind of capability. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, Optimus has his axe and he's good at it, and he's got his hooks, and Bulkhead's got his wrecking ball, and you know, Bumblebee's got his stingers. But these guys swooped in, and this guy can make a freaking tornado come out of the sky. They can lift just about anything. He's not just knocking you back a little way. He's sucking you up into the stratosphere. So, and the fact that they worked well as a team. It's like the one Jetfire transformed and was riding Jetstorm like a surfboard through the sky, and they're just transforming and doing all sorts of crazy stuff, and I was really pleasantly surprised at how cool they were on screen. So, yeah, I like them.
They were effective. It was nice. But moving on to the part I had to rewatch a couple times, and I was fairly disappointed with, was the combination sequence. I tried not to ramp myself up too much for it, but it was... I hate to say, probably the weakest transformation sequence I've seen on animated, which kind of sucks because it was the big combiner one. And one of the main problems I had with it was that it both followed the toys and completely flew in the face of the toys. The twins' arms, like the toys, go behind their bodies or in front of their heads. However, their arms also somehow combine together to form a giant robot arm. And their legs combine together to form the giant robot leg, yet all the shoulder pieces that are shared across those just kind of grow out of parts of them, and it felt like everything I didn't like about the way the G1 animation would have people transform, where they just kind of like morph into the shape they're supposed to be, especially in the case of combiners. So I don't like coming down on the animation that much, but that was a case where I was really, really disappointed. I was hoping for something a lot more effective, or at least a lot more kind of true to the toys, or not even true to the toys, but not like flying right in the face of the toys, like having their limbs merge and stuff like that. So that was actually a downer for me, I gotta say. So just on that stock-ish sequence, I'll get your guys' thoughts. Let's open with Gog Dog.
Definitely some mass shifting going on, too.
This is beyond mass shifting, I think. This was a case of, like, the shoulder guards growing out of a spot on their arm, I think, at one point.
Well, I mean, these guys were depicted as being fairly tiny, maybe Bumblebee size or the same size as Bumblebee, but even skinnier. And it's like, when they're combined, it's like their chest, which was fairly small to begin with, is now as large as an Autobot.
Because I'm so used to animated not being, you know, outright toy accurate, but being true to the toys, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And it also seemed like some of the transformation sequence, like, happened off-screen.
Yeah.
at least when they... I've only seen the episode once, but, like, I know when they decombined, it was like... It would show, like, a part shift, and then... It was
off screen, and they'd land.
Yeah, and then like it would you'd get a different view, and instead of
for their limbs, like, you know, they'd show the legs, their legs combined together and not form a big leg, but just stick together, and they'd show their forearms stick together, move off screen, and then have a giant forearm move on screen. And I was like, what's it? Oh, come on! So that part really didn't do it for me. That was for me the low point of the episode. But Anyway, more thoughts. Aaron!
Yeah, I noticed that as I was sitting there, because I actually had the safeguard guy there. And it was like, okay, the arms go back. Yeah, all right, cool. Keeping it toy act. Wait, what?
Yeah.
The arms go and then go whoop and become, what? No, no. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if that's just, the animators were told get it from here to there, and then after the fact went, oh, wait, there's a toy that does that too.
I will say some of the parts in this episode animation-wise did seem to be a little poor, so I don't know if there is some... Because there was some footage where it shows them standing in an alley, and at one point, Bulkhead, he's... I mean, if he wasn't colored, you wouldn't even be able to determine him. It was like an overhead three-quarter shot. And if it wasn't for him being in colors, I don't know if he would have even been able to identify the character. It was so I don't know if some of it was like farmed out. I'm not sure.
Well, there's always a C team, and to Animated's credit, or at least I guess to the discredit of my ability to see this, you know, usually I'm not able to tell very easily, like when it's the C team and when it's the A team. Like the only time I've thought an episode was the C team was Meltdown, basically. But I guess maybe to this combination scene's discredit, someone like myself was still able to go, like, wow, that was just below par. Like, I don't know. Seth, how about you?
Yeah, well, I don't have the toys, as people may have guessed. So I couldn't really compare how they transform in animation in comparison. But I will comment that, so here's their big gimmick is that they combine and they're apparently going to be bigger and more badass, but then they don't do anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, they're like the Dinobots. They don't do anything. So that was disappointing. And then your comment about like the C-Team and all that, there is that episode in season 2 where there's a few shots of Sumdac where he looks really different.
Yeah, like, you're right.
I can't remember which episode it is, but like just playing off of that comment, there's that one time with where Sumdac, it's like, ew, what? Who drew that? Did they even see the character models? Like, was the character described to them and they just drew it from what they thought it was? I don't know. So I think you may be onto something with that whole theory.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, after they do that, Ratchet is suitably actually outright unimpressed to the point of just going like, oh yeah, so what? Nice trick. Which I found a little odd given that it's really implied that these are the first combiners that a lot of these Autobots may have actually seen.
And the first flying Autobots.
And the first flying Autobots.
It's explained.
So they're about to have a rumble, and then Sentinel Prime goes like, what are you doing beating up my guys? And they're like, they fly. And he's like, oh, we've made a lot of developments since you left. And then he more or less just references the comic book that comes with them as to their origin. Yeah. And then it goes on to go, you know, Prime goes tries to say, hey, by the way, Long-Arm Prime's a traitor. And Sentinel's like, no, shut up! And then somehow gets on a tangent of, and by the way, these guys answer to me and only me, and they're going to catch him, so screw off. Go arrest him. And then Prime and Ratchet are like, no! And they start following Sentinel some more. So, slightly frustrating storytelling point. As said before, in that we know so much more than the characters. It gets to the point where it is kind of frustrating. Where you just really want Sentinel to just, you know, just get the message already. Anyway, your guys' thoughts, Seth.
I mean, really, there's not. I don't think there's much that I can elaborate on for that scene. It just a couple quick lines exchanged, and like you said, it's just this episode a lot. The whole chasing down Wasp thing is just frustrating, and just get it done already. Is at this point, I'm just thinking, just get Wasp or Bumblebee, figure it out, move on. I want to see. I don't care about Safeguard. I don't care about Wasp. I get back to a Shockwave. That's what I want. That's where my head's at this point.
Aaron, how about you?
Yeah, I don't know how many times I wanted to throttle, you know, reach through the TV screen and throttle and say, just pay attention here. Big plot point, you're completely going right over top of it. But, again, I digress too. It's a kid's TV show, so they have to do something like that. But you know, the kids have to get it before the characters get it, supposedly. I don't know.
And Gog Dog, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's not really a whole lot more to say about it. I don't know. I have a feeling that Safeguard was probably capable a whole lot more than we've seen. It seemed more of just like this is just their way to introduce him, and he's probably going to be fully unleashed in a later episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is just kind of his, you know, kind of little reveal. It's like, oh, look, they can combine
it's
all of you who haven't read the comic, haven't seen the toys, haven't, you know, been paying attention, which probably a lot of kids out there who watch haven't. So it's like, oh, cool, they can combine. Wonder what they can do. Well, you'll find out, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll discover that their crotch is loose. So after that, we see Bumblebee running for his life, thinking Decepticons are out to get him as Wasp as well, and he then sees a hot dog stand and tries to apply mustard to his body, which fails. At that point, Prowl and Bulkhead find him and go drop the hot dog stand, and they have the touching moment where Bumblebee gets Bulkhead to believe it's him by talking about that time at boot camp that we all saw in Auto Boot Camp, where they dropped a pillar on Sentinel Prime, and no one ever spoke of it again, so only they could know about it. So Bulkhead gets extremely happy to the point of dancing and making squeaky noises, and then hugs Bumblebee. At that point, the Jet Twins show up and assume that Prowl and Bulkhead, or Bulbous Green One and Motorbike Bot, are traitors as well. And they decide to fight, and the Jet Twins kind of get their butts kicked, which I found very satisfying. In that Bulkhead was like, I don't got time for this backhand. And then one of them, you know, lands preparing a fireball. Prowl's like, I don't got time for this dropkick. So, yeah, that whole little thing of, you know, the good guys fighting each other. I was a little bit kind of like, we just had this happen, and now it's happening again with different characters. So, I wasn't all into that. I was more so into the whole throwback to Auto Boot Camp. That was pretty nice. But that was my thoughts. Gog Dog.
I agree. At this point, it had been kind of getting tired. So it was cool to see, you know, Jetstorm. It's like, oh, I've blown all these other characters away with my wind blast. I'm going to blow Bulkhead away, too. And Bulkhead's like, I'm a little too fat for that. I'm sorry. So.
Yeah.
But, so that was good. It's, you know, it was also kind of a Bulkhead's like, oh no, I just realized this is my friend and, you know, you're not taking him no matter what.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah.
Seth, how about you?
Well, I love how Prime and Ratchet had just made a mistake by making assumptions, and that they assumed that the twins were Decepticons and there was a problem. And now here's the twins making assumptions. No lessons were learned today. Nobody learned anything. So I was like, okay, I guess this is the way we got to do it. So just let them do it.
The way the tango must fall.
Well, I got the impression also that the twins were basically Sentinels do boys. And it wasn't that necessarily that they had made the decision on their own. It was just that, you know, Sentinel was like, you know, these guys are there's a traitor, we're going to get him, and if, you know, he'd already kind of pumped them up as to being like, these guys are dicks, and, you know, I don't know. I just got the feeling that basically half the words that were coming out of their mouth was them just kind of repeating what Sentinel was telling them. They didn't seem to be free thinkers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they did come up with tag team as their word for combining, which wasn't bad, but,
So let us make tag team brothers.
Yes.
Yes.
And then we will have vodkas.
And much women's butts. We will have them remove breastplate and give us much action with mouth.
When we were in Earth Supermarket, we see baby powder and said, what a country!
Aaron, you talk.
I talk now. The bulkhead wasp-bodied bumblebee thing, all I could think of was the old, I'll love him and squeeze him and call him George. And it seemed like it was, this may be another instance of the C-Squad syndrome, but it seemed as if the scale between Bumblebee and Bulkhead went even further off as Bulkhead was carrying Bumblebee in one hand for a little while. It's like, yeah, look, he's, okay, scale issues. And then the, I did like seeing the repair bots, you know, putting the smackdown on the supposed super-de-duper new warriors of the Guard. It was just like, you know, like you said, bulkheads. No, I don't have the time to screw with this. I'm not getting blown around.
Backhand.
You know, eat wrecking ball. And then Prowl just doing the ninja jump leap. But.
Yep. And also, I think this is the point where we get to see the little resurgence of the Wasp in the base plot where he sucks at Ninja Gladiator. And then decides, well, I'm going to learn everything Bumblebee knows so I can become Bumblebee because I've clearly gone mad. And goes and basically starts accessing all of their archives. And in the meantime, we get this lovely scene of Autobots driving in the rain, and we see that Sentinel really well and truly does suck at driving. He then decides to run instead, which I found kind of amusing. So Prime, you know, he tries to go, hey, by the way! Long Arm! Traitor! We should get Wasp! Because Wasp is innocent! And Sentinel's like, shut up! So Prime's like, I don't got time for this! So he transforms, goes and starts running next to Sentinel and just starts shouting at him. And Sentinel goes like, oh, you're so out of line! I'm going to arrest you too! I'm going to arrest everybody! Then he gets a calm signal from the Jet Twins to go like, the you know, Bulkhead and Prowl are traitors too. He's like, I'm going to arrest them too! And then then Prime goes like, all right, screw it, I'm getting there first, you suck. And he just drives off. So then Sentinel goes like, oh, no, you don't! He transforms. He starts to, like, fly off the road. So he transforms again to keep running and then basically tells Jazz to go do it. And there's also a great line from Jazz where he says he puts up with Sentinel basically by ignoring everything he says, which I found amusing. And then Ratchet kind of mouths off at Sentinel, too. So Sentinel gets a lot of abuse in this episode, which really balances everything out nicely. Anyway, I guess for that scene, did you guys enjoy the Sentinel abuse and the, I think, the third or fourth time that Sentinel has been told Long Arm Prime is a traitor? Aaron?
I did like the arrest them all and let God sort of, or Magnus sort them out. Yeah. And then also the, it was Jazz said I ignore half of what he says, and then Prime Optimus just goes, only half?
A lot of good quips.
The quip in that area, but yeah, again, it's, you know, the comedy of seeing this guy who's alt mode should be able to tackle a little bit of water, no problem whatsoever, sitting there forced to run and run very comically too. You know, it's like the big leg run in place almost type of run. But
Dog, how about yourself?
I don't know. I think the episode established pretty early on that this episode was basically going to be about trying to discern, you know, who was the real Wasp and who was the real Bumblebee. It's just, I think by this time in the episode, it was just kind of like, just get it on. Because, I don't think that the idea was bad. It just seemed like by this point they were just kind of hurting to just come up with excuses of why no one could figure it out at this point and why no one trusted and why the word traitor was still being thrown around. I mean, yeah, I love the line by Jazz of, you know, I just ignore everything he says, but it was just kind of like, you know, again, harkens back to the fact that the audience knows more than these guys know, and it's just like, come on, just get on with it. We'd already seen the flashback of Long Arm Prime, so we knew he was up to something. And it's just like, we want to see what's going on with Shockwave. And it's just like this whole wild goose chase. While I like the concept of it, there are there were parts of it I did like the whole, you know, the whole little homage to the repaints and all that, but mm-hmm. it's just like, ugh, it's just like, I don't know, it seemed by this point to be dragging just a little bit.
Seth, what are your thoughts? Was it dragging? Was it puttering? Was it sprinting?
Oh, yeah, well, like I've said repeatedly now, this whole aspect of the episode is just not what I'm interested in, but, for people that listen to our supplemental on the Three's a Crowd
that we recorded episode, and
where I busted out my whole theory about Optimus, I was feeling that theory is maybe getting a little validated with Optimus and Ratchet starting to push back against Sentinel mm-hmm. a little bit, like maybe that veneer of, oh, we're just mechanics, is breaking down, and Prime's like, I really can't put up with Sentinel's crap anymore, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Or I'm completely barking up the wrong tree, and there's nothing to it at all. And everybody can point and laugh at me when the season ends. And
now everyone can write you the fanfic where it's your version.
Yes.
That part of the episode, the Autobots, after that, they all meet up. They almost once again start fighting. And then they once again assert that, hey, Wasp isn't a double agent, and Long Arm Prime is, and we have a Wasp at the base who looks like Bumblebee, so why don't we sort all this out? The upside being that now they finally do go to sort it all out. And I was very satisfied to see that part of the episode come about. There's also a fun little line where it was one of the lines that kind of made the episode win me over in the end was Jazz just pulling up the bulkhead going like, so, there's double agent robot in disguise Autobot who's now a Decepticon who's now dressed up like one of the Autobots using his auto blah 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 blah. Like, he just explains it in this really long, convoluted way, and Bulkhead's like, yeah, I think that actually sounds more confusing, but that's about the gist of it. So, what I liked about this episode overall was just that it seemed to be kind of making fun of itself. Like, it wasn't like a G1 episode where all this would be happening and it's all just happening straight-faced, but in this case it was happening straight-faced with the occasional little, like, wow, this is actually getting kind of silly, isn't it? Which culminates in the next scene, but, yeah, I guess, did you guys want to just move on to that, or was there anything you wanted to drop about the, I think now, fifth or sixth time that this little conflict happened?
Let's move on. Yeah. We can cover it all in one breath.
Yeah, they...
Well, just real quick, it does seem like they were trying to go for that, like, comedy farce, like the movie Clue, where everyone's running from room to room, and it's frantic, but there's not enough... They don't change the scene rapidly, and there's too much talking in between for it to have that fast-paced farce kind of humor. Mm-hmm.
Well, it does. I think it ends up succeeding at farce in the next scene where they all sit down, and they start interrogating Wasp, who's still dressed up as Bumblebee, and he starts citing all kinds of things Sentinel Prime that he saw Sentinel Prime do that Bumblebee did to him, and Sentinel Prime's going like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember. And then he drops one, and Sentinel goes like, I don't remember. Oh, wait a second. And then
that was you guys.
And then he also cites the SUV episode, the society that he beat, Angry Archer, Slow-Mo, etc. It's nice to hear them get name dropped again. And then Bumblebee, who looks like Wasp, just goes like, "Well, he could have figured that out by reading our archives." So then this was the big nod, I think, to Prime Problem. Is everyone goes like, "There's only one way to solve this. Let's have them play video games." And they both get sat down. They're like, the winner of this game is clearly Bumblebee. And then, I love this, because Wasp, he's like looking around. He looks kind of freaked out. He looks left. He looks right. He sees walls of Autobots everywhere. After a long silence, he just snaps and grabs hold of Bumblebee and holds his stinger to his head. This was a confusing part. He lost the vocal processor cover, which I'm guessing, I don't know. It just seemed kind of odd. It seemed like they said they'd swap throats, but... Then sometimes Wasp was just talking like himself again. But, so instead of having a silly contest to figure out who does it, they set up a silly contest to figure out who the real one is, and then the fake one just snaps because he knows he's going to lose. I got a big laugh out of that myself. So, you guys, any thoughts to drop? Let's open the floor.
I, I think this is where it kind of brought it around and did kind of, like you were saying before, parody itself and the body switch sci-fi TV show that happens in every sci-fi show where it's, no, I'm not him, I'm me type of deal with the culmination at the I'ma shoot him in the face ending before he takes off.
Gog, how about yourself?
Okay. For one, as soon as they said, okay, they're like, there's only one way to prove it, I'm like, okay, somebody's going to come up with some really cool idea where definitely, there's no question asked. And when they said play video games, I was just like, come on. I mean, I get that it's funny, but it's like, there's people's lives on the line. The entire security of the Autobots has been, put to the test, and they're going to base this all on a video game. The only justifying thing to that plot point for me was the fact that it never happened.
Yes.
It's like, we're going to do that, and then Wasp completely freaks out before they even get close to doing it. So
that's what made it win for me, was that they did that. Yeah. Like, they broke the mold slightly and just had him freak out before anything happened.
But I was still, I was disappointed that they did that. I get that it was trying to be funny, but there was just this whole serious tone that just seemed to be missing from this, and especially we'll cover it in a minute, but contrasted to the end, the end just seems so serious, compared to the rest of the thing. The other problem that I have, and this is a problem that I have from an earlier episode, I think a season 2 episode, where the Constructicons first appear, but an interesting thing about this episode is, with the exception of the couple of scenes where Shockwave slash Longarm is, there's basically no Decepticons. This is all Autobot versus Autobot. And they even make it a point to continually state that Wasp is not a traitor, and he can be redeemed. And so I thought that was a cool thing that they were going to be going towards, was that Optimus seemed to not only want to get Wasp to prove that Larm was a traitor, but he also seemed to legitimately want to,
clear his name.
There's a word for it, but whatever. But he legitimately seemed to want to clear Wasp's name in all this. And here it is. They've finally uncovered.
Absolve.
No, but good enough. But
get on with it.
Absolve in his mouth.
No, that probably wasn't what I was looking for. But the thanks for making me lose my track. But okay, but here it is.
That's
okay,
what I'm
they
here
got
for.
Him. Shut up. They got him up against the wall. Everyone knows what's going on, and instead of someone going to Wasp, even though he has pretty much proved that he's a bad guy at this point. Instead of saying, look, we know you're innocent, you're done, you're redeemed, Bulkhead comes out with this comment of like, no, you're not a good guy. Even when we were in, training together, you were still the bad guy, so we're not going to help you. It's like, this dude has been in prison for how many years? And I had the exact same problem with the Constructicon episode, because the Constructicon episode, okay, these two dimwits, it's like, we get the fact that, that they're not the most... straight-edge Autobots or Cybertronians or whatever that there are. But when the Constructicons lose their memory, what does Optimus Prime do? Instead of taking them in under their belt, he turns around and leaves them unconscious on an overpass saying, no, we don't need them, Bulkhead. Let's go the other way. And they leave these two, they just leave the guys in the middle of the road. They've been just created by an Allspark, and they're Cybertronian. And he just turns away and just leaves them there. It's like... who would make that decision? The only justification, to the fact that this absolutely ridiculousness on the part of the Autobots is there are consequences for their actions. The entire reason why the Constructicons turned into Decepticons was because Optimus made the stupidest decision he has in this entire show by just turning around and walking away. And look what it cost them. There are severe consequences, because Megatron never would have had that space bridge built. Blur probably never would have died. And maybe it is just lazy writing, but if you want to look at it from a whole continuity sense, Optimus Prime caused all that because he was an idiot. And the same thing is going to happen. It's no secret. We know Wasp is going to turn into Waspinator. You know why Wasp turns into Waspinator? Because Bulkhead is a freaking moron and can't keep his mouth shut. Oh, you hurt my friend. How about you have some sympathy to this guy that's just been in a stockade for all these years? No, they have to make some smart comment. And yeah, I think the writing could have been better because from a viewer point of view, you have sympathy for Wasp because look at all he's been through, and then look when he tries to get his revenge, but he totally has the opportunity to be redeemed by his fellow faction members, and they again completely turn their back on him. I think it's ridiculous.
Seth, agree or disagree?
Yeah, agree. It was kind of messed up that they're just going to write off Wasp as being a bad guy because he was kind of a jerk. Like, that's why he has to not be taken kind of back in and any sort of understanding to be made because, oh, well, you were an arrogant jerk. Well, Sentinel Prime's an arrogant jerk, and Bumblebee is kind of a dick. So
Exactly.
Yeah, so that was kind of a cop-out. I'll call it a cop-out. Then the only other thing from the scene, because we're going pretty long on this deal, when the lights get shot out again, my first thought was like, really? Again? And then when Ratchet has his line of, oh, come on! I busted out laughing. That was like the biggest laugh anything in any episode of Animated has ever gotten out of me, because I was like, yeah. Ratchet is, he's become like such a great character. Like, this Ratchet is just he's just cranky, and he's not afraid to be like, you gotta be kidding me! Like this, So that was good.
Well, that combined with the way that Wasp reacted to the video game was pretty much like, those two things won me over on the episode that I was otherwise kind of going like, man, that was kind of a little weak. Then they do those two things. I was like, okay, it's kind of, self-deprecating humor. I can dig that. So it kind of kept me together in the end. But then we moved on from there to the final scene. Well, also, just want to bring up the slightly morbid thing. Like, after, they escape and Wasp presumably swaps helmets and voices and colors, we find out that it's electrolyzed or whatever. Like paint or paint apps that react to electricity or something like that. Bumblebee's lying on the ground. Bulkhead jumps on him, starts pounding on him. Bumblebee's going like, "No, it's me!" And then to check, Bulkhead rips off his helmet. Yeah. And I was expecting Bumblebee to go like, "Yeah!" And just like scream in pain as Bulkhead tears off part of his body, which. I think the only downside I had for that little bit was that it made the creepiness of Waspinator doing it at the start get kind of diminished. But anyway, that's the only thing I could really think of there. They let the elite guard know about Long Arm. So we cut to Cybertron, you see Ironhide going like, hey, Long Arm Prime, we know you're in there. And I was like, oh god, they're going to kill Ironhide. Then he turns the corner, and we see one of the last remaining spoilers. We see Ultra Magnus not just lying in a heap, but lying in a heap with one arm torn off, half of his body blasted apart, and his legs, like, bent at a horrible angle. And Ironhide runs over, and for some reason I found this odd. He goes, like, where's your hammer? And Ultra Magnus is just like, shockwave! Like, that's his first thing he runs over when he runs over to this half-dead robot. I'm guessing the hammer has some massive significance. It may be that they're building up that hammer has, like, the power of the Matrix or something, but basically Ultra Magnus now is, like, he knows, and he's been assassinated, or at least attempted to be assassinated. We're not really sure because they don't make it clear if he's dead or not at the end, but, yeah, the drama picks up at the end of this episode. So, your guys' thoughts. Let's open with Seth.
Okay. I loved this scene. Like, for everything I didn't like about the rest of the episode, and it's barely, 30 seconds long, if that long. so great. Just because, like, kind of like with you, we see Ironhide, he's, like, basically searching room for room. He's all by himself. It's like, okay, Shockwave's going to, like, jump out of the shadows and take him out. And then didn't see it coming. Like, we had seen the line art for the spoiler of Ultra Magnus destroyed, and just no hint that that was going to happen so early in the season. Like, I assumed that was going to be, like, last episode or second to last episode sort of thing, where Ultra Magnus, and we'll see him being in some titanic battle. But to just dump it on us right at the end, just so great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, man, I just love that scene, and I just watched it over and over again. And
it was grisly, too, like, just the angle and the way he was lying on the ground, and, like, the way they revealed it was like, oh my god.
Yeah, just broken, and yeah, and then the Ironhide's focus on the location of the hammer, like, the hammer must have more significance than it's just a weapon.
Yeah, well, like, you notice in the flashbacks in Transwarp that, like, Ultra Magnus was carrying that hammer around everywhere. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, is this some kind of just, like, it's a symbol of his office? But, like, now I'm starting to wonder if, like, the, as I like to call it, the Raging Thunder Magnus has some kind of, like, MacGuffin significance.
Yeah, maybe it's, like, a key that activates something, I don't know. And then, like, was, and then it's like, well, maybe that's what Shockwave's after. Like, when he's taking matters into his own hands, he's saying, like, I can't wait anymore, I'm getting the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has clearly targeted, like, did he, so the question I have is did he target Ultra Magnus to take out the Autobot leadership, which is a good strategy, or did he target Magnus to get the hammer? For something we don't know yet. And it's just, man, just that whole long arm Shockwave story arc, it's so great.
And he's also, once again, like a phantom killer. Like, he's yeah. very likely going to get...
Yeah,
like,
he's so lethal. And it's more like kind of how Shockwave was in the comics more than the old cartoon. Mm-hmm. And then the older comics before he just became this very cold, calculating, it's all about logic sort of thing. Like, in those old comics, he was very much like Megatron is screwing everything up. He's not the leader we need. So I'm going to kill Megatron. Not because I'm some egomaniac like Starscream, but because the Decepticons need a better leader, and that's me. So I'm just going to whack this dude and shoot him in the back. And just, man, Shockwave's such a good character. When done right, and animated is doing him right.
Gog, how about you? Do you agree with Seth, or are you going to throw down and defend cartoon G1 Shockwave?
I don't think both of them are awesome. Neither one of them have to be pitted against each other. I agree with what Buzz said. I think Shockwave's story right now has been the best part of animated, hands down. It's been a long time coming, you know, ever since fairly the beginning of near the beginning of season 2 with the Auto Boot Camp. It's been the overreaching story arc of the show. And again, like I had said earlier, it's really satisfying to have these plot points moving along at such a fast rate. Even though this episode did seem to drag a little bit with some of the jokes and the humor and how long it took for things to happen. At the same time, the overall story of the show is moving along nice because, you know, it transwarped. It almost made it seem as if, you know, Long Arm was going to be there for a long time putting plots into motion. And we learn now that it's all open. There is no more Long Arm Prime. He's gone. It's just Shockwave now. So that was probably the last time we saw Long Arm. He's gone. It's just straight up Decepticon now. The interesting thing that I want to see is Shockwave didn't panic and run. He didn't say, okay, my cover's blown, I'm getting out of here. He said, I'm taking matters into my own hands. So kind of like Seth, I wonder what those plans are. Because he seems to have a goal in mind, and I don't know. But he seems to have an objective, and it's more of, at this point, as an offensive matter than a defensive, I got to get out of here matter.
Yeah, definitely. I was glad to see he didn't just, like, cut tail and run back to Megatron to just assemble the evil army or something. He's, like, up to something clever.
It probably still involves the space bridges, too. That's just my hunch.
Yeah. Aaron, how about you? Any thoughts on the end of the episode?
Yeah, suitably epic. I don't know if that's really epic. I don't know. Tired. But seeing Magnus in that state and presumably dying or deactivating upon whispering out, you know, shock. Yeah, yes, the shock.
Shockwave.
You know, and it was, you know, I'm also wondering what the deal with the hammer is. Like I said, is it his binky or is it like that's how you get into the Autobot wash executive washroom or what the deal is with it? But why that's the first thing? Not oh my god, medic bot! It's where's the hammer? I had some drywall to do.
His arm's blown off and his skin's missing. The hammer, where is it?
But.
Yeah, it's a really cool way to end the episode. Just makes you really hooked. Makes you want to see the next one, so I'm looking forward to next week. And that's pretty much our discussion on it. So thanks once again, Aaron, GogDog, and Seth. Take a bow.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank me.
Ba-ba!
Thank you in the mouth.
Yeah, just to close us off, Seth, kill the joke once and for all. This one's ending.
In the mouth?
In your mouth. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, folks. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. We'll see you for the next episode of Animated. Or we'll see you in the... Well, we won't release. You'll hear us in the next release of WTF at TFW. Bye-bye!
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.